I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Donovan Pyle. He is the CEO of Health Compass Consulting. He's also the author of Fixing Healthcare, How Executives Can Save Their People, Their Business, and the Economy. He's a senior advisor at the Validation Institute, where he was recently named 2025 Benefits Advisor of the Year. Donovan has seen the misaligned incentives that are built into the way companies purchase healthcare. And if you are providing healthcare for your employees, you're probably seeing double-digit year-on-year price increases, and it's built into the system. Donovan is one of those people that's trying to fix that. And so we're going to talk about that today so that you can still provide health coverage for your employees without going broke. Donovan, welcome.
Thanks, Craig. That's a great introduction, and I think quite apropos given what's going on in the world these days. Good to be here.
Well, thank you. Well, and you know, when we were talking in the green room, I told you a story about a company based where you live in Orlando. I call them a criminal organization because they accepted a plea deal from the DOJ where they paid $10 million in 2018 and admitted to knowingly billing people for equipment they never did. They never delivered. And they did it knowingly. And they admitted that. And it's just, it's those type of things that are just out of control.
100%. I think, you know, one thing that gets lost in these conversations is that employers who cover 164 million Americans with healthcare benefits, 25% of what they waste or what they spend is actually wasted. I mean, that's over $300 billion a year in wasted profits. And so the opportunity for businesses who pay attention to these things and gain first mover advantage is immense.
Let's do some math on this. Okay, so I've heard a couple different stats. I've heard that health benefits are like the number two line item in most businesses' budget. I've heard number three. What is that aligned with what you're hearing?
Yeah, typically in the number two or number three spots, and often the fastest growing financial risk on corporate P&Ls.
So what you're saying is like you could go into any business, pretty much any business, a business that hasn't run into somebody like you or one of the other folks that we've had on the podcast, and you could immediately deliver a 25% price reduction on their number two or number three line item.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of opportunities, especially if, you know, for businesses that have over 50 employees, that's really where a lot more opportunities open up. But yes, there are tremendous opportunities across the board for those that are willing to pay attention and engage.
Now, when you find that, does that impact quality of service? Is that, you know, hey, we're going to cut this out and it's going to cut the services?
It's a great question, Craig, because, you know, the benefits brokerage industry has kind of conditioned employers to think that the only way that you can reduce costs is by watering down coverage, basically passing more costs in the way of out-of-pocket expenses to employees. But if you study, you know, the history on this and the people that were really pioneers in health plan innovation and financing and procurement of healthcare, the secret sauce is actually improving. you save money by improving care and coverage for employees. That's how you actually do that effectively, not by passing costs onto employees.
Well, one of our prior guests is Allison DePoli, and she talks about how people they have like untreated conditions that lead to diabetes, that lead to amputations. All of that's more expensive than treating it before it gets there.
100%. So yeah, so for example, I mean, diabetes is obviously a very common condition, and you know, to treat diabetes and manage it well costs about $8,000 a year. But
Whoa.
to which okay, it's a lot of money, but the cost of not treating it and not managing that disease well is well north of $50,000 a year, because as I'm sure you've seen this with friends and family, you know, some people that don't have diabetes and they're not, you know, managing it correctly because they're afraid, they're avoiding care because of costs, et cetera, they end up in the emergency room and they end up hospitalized for a week. Right? And that costs over $50,000. And then you've got all the soft costs as well. They're out of work for a week. They haven't been able to take care of their family. They're, you know, the where they work, the customers are impacted, on and on and on. So to your point, you know, yes, exactly. The best way to reduce healthcare costs is to keep people healthy, get them the treatment and care that they actually need to be healthy.
Well, let's back up a little bit. How did you get into this business?
Yeah, so you know, I worked for a multinational insurer, and benefits brokers were my customers. So we would have our suite of products and we would sell our products through benefits brokers who would sell them to employers, right? That was our biggest distribution channel. And while I was there, you know, as I worked my way up through the organization, I got to a point where I was actually designing these bonus programs for brokers who sold the most products. And so, you know, we would literally take these, you know, executives from these brokerage firms on all-inclusive trips around the world to really reward, one, thank them for selling our products, but really it was part of, you know, to get them to sell more of our products, right? We weren't doing this out of the goodness of our hearts. This was just the way the game was played. But what I noticed was that, you know, a lot of brokers seem pretty apathetic about bringing the best solutions, especially when it came to health plans. And you know, I'd become very much aware and inspired by the work that a gentleman by the name of Harris Rosen had done in Orlando, where he had saved his hotel over $500 million on healthcare over the last 30 years by improving coverage, providing a superior product for his employees. And I thought, you know, very naively, if I just move to the brokerage side of the industry, I can probably scale a bunch of those solutions. I can probably help a lot of people, and I can probably make some money doing that. I was completely wrong.
Wow, what happened?
So I moved to the brokerage side of the industry, worked for a national brokerage firm. From day one, there was resistance. I was coming in, you know, asking about, well, what do you like to do for this kind of, you know, innovative approach, yada, yada, yada. Nobody there really knew what I was talking about. And it became very clear after building a book of business and helping some of our clients that they're not in the business of, you know, helping to optimize these supply chains, this healthcare supply chain. That's not what they do. They sell canned insurance products, and that's what they do. And helping employers maximize the return on their investment is not really part of that equation. If it's not insurance, then they don't know really what to do with it. So I was actually I got terminated out of the blue for advocating, you know, for our customers and being too hard on one health insurer who happened to pay them their largest bonus each year. And so
Wow.
that was a real shock to the system. And I said, you know what, this revenue model does not serve the end user. We have to create a different revenue model so that we can align ourselves with employers to help them meet their objectives.
You know, Dave Ramsey says, go into any city and look at the tallest buildings, and the tallest buildings are going to be banks and insurance companies.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a story about the CEO of Sony in Japan coming to the United States and seeing these huge buildings that were owned by insurance companies. And so he, in Japan, they started a life insurance division. And that's their most profitable division. We know them just for electronics over here. But in Japan, their bread and butter is life insurance.
Wow. So you got fired. That sucks. But fired for looking out for your customer. I mean,
Yeah, I
that's.
exactly.
Boy, that's when you know you're in the wrong job. When you, well, obviously it's fixed. You now have a new job to look for. But when you get fired for looking after your customers, that is perverse.
Yeah, there was just some pieces that I really didn't understand about the fully understand about the industry at that time. And that was, the moment when I really became radicalized to say, listen, we have to, as an industry, we have to evolve and change our revenue model so that we can solve the problems that employers need us to solve.
Well, one of my sayings that I cleave to is customer demands will absolutely be met, hopefully, by you. And so, yes, for a period of time, these big insurance companies can get away with what they're doing. But give any system enough time, and what people thought were unstoppable monopolies fall. In the late 90s, everybody thought that Microsoft would forever be the dominant monopoly. There was no way around it. And Bill Gates got mocked. He was testifying before Congress, and he got mocked for saying, "Yes, we do dominate the industry. That's because we work very, very hard. But make no mistake, in one generation, we could lose our spot." And people mocked him. They're like, "That's a ridiculous thing to say." Ironically, when he made that statement, there was a little-known startup in Mountain View called Google. And I think Google's getting ready to, I think Google's day in the sun is winding down, I believe. And I believe that that's been coming for a few years. So that's why I'm excited by people like you, because the current system, well, and it's in your book, how the, in the title of your book, how, saving employees, their business, and the economy, how executives can save people, their business, and the economy. And so, what I've heard is the new norm is double digit. That's what I'm experiencing. Is my insurance, I buy insurance for me personally, and my rates go up 20, 22% a year.
Yeah, it's just not sustainable. And so, at the macro level, I think what purchasers need to do is find a way to buy healthcare more directly. There's studies out there showing that your primary care physician probably only makes around 27 cents on the dollar, right? For every care that you spend on, every dollar that you spend on primary care, your physician actually only makes a fraction of that. It's all of the rest of the money is going towards administrative bloat. And it's being more and more documented about how health insurers are actually marking up the unit prices of services, right? So your doctor, might be charging $100 for the visit, but the insurance company is marketing up another $50 and charging, the employer that $150 for that visit. So there's just a lot of administrative bloat that, I think at the macro level, consumers and employers want to find a way to circumvent those administrative layers and buy what you really want, which is healthcare.
I had an experience like very, very recently that's has me puzzled. And I think maybe you may have just tripped over the answer to it. So 8 weeks ago, I got the flu, and I never go to the doctor because I'm generally healthy. I'm in my 50s and I'm not on a single medication.
Nice.
And
You got me beat.
And I go to the doctor, I'm feeling miserable. I have to pay $120 at the emergency clinic. Just so you know, I'm on a high deductible plan, so the first 5,000 is out of pocket for me. And I pay 120, and then they do a flu and a COVID test, and I have to pay like another 30 for that. And then literally like 3 or 4 days later, I start getting a bill for another $30. I'm like, what? Where the heck did this come from? And I get my reconciliation from, from Blue Cross. And I see that all those are covered, and left me wondering, would it have been cheaper for me to just go in and say, What's the cash price for a visit? I'll pay it. You don't have to worry about insurance.
And this is a great point. So, the latest studies from Rand show that people that pay cash out of pocket get better deals on the unit prices of care than Fortune 50 companies, health insurers with millions of lives of leverage that they could use if only they had the incentive to do that. And so, it speaks to the perverse incentives that are really, just taken over the industry and led to these double digit increases that you're talking about. So you gotta understand those things as a business. If you're gonna fight this and take it seriously so that you can improve the financial and physical health of your organization, you got to understand these dynamics and what you're up against. And frankly, as you know, CFOs, they have virtually no training in healthcare financing and procurement. HR people have virtually no training in healthcare financing and procurement. They rely on outside experts. Just like, I own a small business. I don't want to know everything about the changing tax laws each year. I hire a CPA to cover my blind spots and protect me. That's why I do that. But, when we're talking about employer-sponsored health plans and benefits, they rely on brokers. And that's a mistake if you understand the incentive models of the brokerage industry.
Well, help me unwind this visit because this is the thing that's phenomenally weird. Originally, they charged me $150 for that visit when I was there for the visit, and they seem real happy with that amount. And then as soon as they file insurance talks the price up another 30 bucks.
Yeah,
Why would
so
insurance do that?
your claim got repriced, okay? So, they didn't have the cash price, what the negotiated rate unit price is from Blue Cross in front of them. And so they thought, okay, $100 is probably around what it's going to be. And then they sent the claim off to Blue Cross to get repriced, right, through their discounted rating engine. And so that's exactly what happened is that once it got repriced, it said, oh, actually, you owe more. We don't want health insurers are not in the business of reducing healthcare costs. That's not what they do. They don't want that in the commercial space. They may want that in the Medicare space, and that creates a whole other, host of issues. But in the commercial space, they are not trying to negotiate hard with hospitals. So this is one of the things we have a chapter on this in my book, and that's we talk about the history of the industry. So one thing that, since you've got a lot of business-minded people on your pod here, they'll probably find this interesting is that, in 1929, when Baylor University Hospital in Dallas, Texas had this epiphany of partnering with a large employer and having the employer prepay for their hospital services. This was SaaS before SaaS, right? And so they partnered with the Dallas Teachers Union. And the Dallas Teachers Union agreed to pay 50 cents per employee per month so that the Dallas teachers could go, the women that work there could go to this nice clean hospital and have deliver their babies. That was the pitch. And that model was so successful that within the next 10 years, 14 other of these health plans, which got rebranded as Blue Cross, popped up around the country. Now, here's the kicker. It's the actual hospitals that put up the seed money to found what became these health insurers. So health insurers are simply distribution for hospitals. They're partners. And if, again, as an executive, if you don't know that, then the world gets very confusing. But they are partners. And so they both benefit when costs go up, not down.
I'm biting my tongue because I saw that one area in my own journey where It was very clear that my primary care physician was linked to the hospital where I spent 3 months, and they all had incentives that were not focused on my health.
Correct. Correct. These large health systems are not buying up independent primary care physician groups because they love primary care. That's not why they're doing that. They're doing that to control the rest of the supply chain because primary care is basically a loss leader, right? There's very little money in primary care. But if you can control the rest of the referral chain, then you can control where the margins really are. And that's in, secondary and tertiary care, in labs, imaging. And this is why we end up, and you may have, experienced this yourself. You probably ended up having an MRI done that costs $6,000 when, you can get that same MRI for $500, $600 down the street.
I actually, we were talking in the green room about Kristen Dickerson, Dr. Dickerson.
Yeah.
And I had, because I'm on a high deductible plan, I'm on a grandfathered plan before ACA. And so I have an incentive to go procure the best health care for the money.
Yep.
And so I needed I think it was a CAT scan. And I was referred to the number one provider of scanning, radiology here in Austin. And it would take like 2 or 3 weeks to get in, and it was like $800. And I just kind of paused and I was like, I wonder if there's anybody else in town that does this.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know Kristen at the time. I called this other place called Park, was it? It's right across from one of the major hospitals in Austin, and Park Imaging, I think. And they said, we can get you in tomorrow for half the price. And there weren't rusty scalpels laying around. There, you
Right.
know, the place was clean. The people were nice. They were happy I was there. They made it a
Nice.
pleasant experience.
Yeah.
And I found out later that Kristen's the medical director at that facility. And all it took was a phone call to cut my price in half.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I think we've talked about these PPO networks. The concept of networks is like it's a relatively new construct. Yeah, all of this is relatively new. Someone just made this up, right? This idea of like we're going to have these pre-negotiated networks, and so we know what the prices are, yada yada. The challenge is that these networks have obfuscated what the actual prices are. And if you don't know the prices, you don't have a real free market, right? I mean, it's impossible to have a free market, a functioning market, when you don't know the price of anything. That's a pretty strong signal to consumers. And so, what we're all suffering under is an inverse marketplace where, when you pay BMW prices, you often end up with a Yugo. And,
Wait,
like, I mean, if,
whoa. There are people that are listening who have no idea what Yugo is.
Okay, so a Yugo is a basically was a tin can on wheels in the late 80s, early 90s. And I know this because I did a cross country trip, part of a cross country trip with my uncle who rented a Yugo out in the Rocky Mountains. Don't ever do that. But anyways, it's a junk car. It's a total junk car. And so, this is the challenge, is that without these market signals of having prices, you just we have this in there's no correlation between cost and quality. It's just the inverse marketplace. And so that to me, as someone who helps manage healthcare supply chains for businesses, this is an incredible opportunity, because if we can put them in a position where they can actually see pricing, then we can really help to manage their supply chain for value and deliver more value to stakeholders.
All right. Well, and so as we wrap up, how do you work with people? What do you do for businesses, and what does that look like? How is that structured?
Yeah, so basically what I outline in the book is that there's a six-step process for healthcare transformation at the employer level. And the first step is getting unbiased advice. So you can do that by hiring benefits expertise in-house or working with this new breed of management consulting firms that specialize in this area of healthcare financing and procurement. That's the first step. That's a non-negotiable. It improves your compliance footing, et cetera, et cetera. The second step is to really quantify your current state, right? Quantifying, there are basically seven categories of value within a benefits program. So score yourself on those seven categories of value so you can identify opportunities, set goals, and then develop roadmaps to achieve them. But it's amazing. It doesn't matter. I mean, I was talking with the CFO of a 50,000 life group last week. They had no KPIs around what is success. We're literally just throwing things against the wall and hoping that it sticks for these 50,000 employees and their dependents. And so they really, what employers really need from my perspective is a framework for how to get from point A to point B. And that's the clarity that we provide.
Well, and kind of coming back to something that came up at the beginning, the thing that just really stuck with me, I'm a numbers guy. And when you said that you can go into almost any business and find 25% of waste, and we know that healthcare is either the number two or number three line item in the budget, I mean, I can't imagine the business that wouldn't. I mean, those are hard gains to make. You'd have to go do more sales to get that kind of gain. And here's something. With your existing sales, with your existing team, without hiring anybody, you can get a bump for your business. That's a no-brainer to me.
I actually like to joke with our customers and people, executives that, if you do this the right way, your benefits professional, whether you have that in-house expertise or you're hiring a management consulting firm, can add more to your company's bottom line than your top salespeople in some cases.
Wow. Well,
Right? So
Donovan,
imagine, yeah,
no, go
just,
ahead.
yeah. So imagine, instead of having to go out and find that new salesperson that just rocks it and does everything you dream them of doing, you can unlock this trapped capital on your own that you already have and put that back on your bottom line.
That's awesome. Well, Donovan, how can people reach you?
Sure. Well, they can reach me on LinkedIn at Donovan Pyle, linkedin.com/DonovanPyle or at donovanpyle.com.
And your book is Fixing Healthcare: How Executives Can Save Their People, Their Business, and the Economy.
Huge opportunity. Take a
Donovan,
look.
thanks for sharing your story on Leaders and Legacies.
Great to see you, Craig. Thank you.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com. Or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.